How are you doing tonight? Oh, it's a Thursday night full of banjo, and you are happy to be here. A few announcements before we get things started. We need to point out our exits for you. We have an emergency exit up on stage to the right. There's one out the way you came in. We do ask that you keep the aisles clear for the wait staff. Kat is your server tonight. Bleak, good to her. How about a big round of applause for Kat? For Katie up in the live stream, for Grace in the box office, Harvey and Gloria in the kitchen. We're so thrilled to be back here putting on concerts 7 nights a week here. We do ask that you remain masked during the show unless you're actively eating and drinking. We still do maintain our masking policy here to keep folks as safe as humanly possible. We've done a lot of improvements to the space with air circulation and air purifiers, hoping to keep everyone safe during these days. So please do wear your masks through the show. Also, do not take flash photos. We're happy to have you take photos, but please make sure you turn flash off as well as sound on your cameras, phones, you know what they are. So we have our newsletters out on the tables. It'll take you through the end of June. Visit passscene.org. You'll see shows into July. Like I said, we're back to 7 nights a week. We've got our Campfire Festival coming up over Memorial Day weekend. We've got a stage outdoors at Harvard Square's Mayfair this Sunday from 11 p.m. Oh, no, not 11 p.m. That would be very strange. At 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. outdoors in Harvard Square, our stage will be down at the corner of Brattle and Church Streets. So come on out and see some live music outdoors on a gorgeous summery day on Sunday. We've got, how many of you are members of PASSEAM? I know there's a good number of you here. This place has been a nonprofit organization now for 27 years, but the venue's been around for 64 years here in Harvard Square, believe it or not. We couldn't do it without you. We are also a music school. We have community programs. We have festivals. We give grants to artists. And we do all of this with the help of folks like you coming out to shows, but by becoming members as well. A membership gets you discounts on shows. You get to buy tickets early. You get discounts at the School of Music. You get free admission to our live streams. Hello to the folks tuned in on the live stream right now. We're happy to be able to serve our community outside of the room by continuing to do live streams. But we are mostly thrilled to have music here in the room right now. Please welcome to the stage an American treasure, Tony Trischka.
Thank you. You really got to rush up here before the applause dies down. It's always awkward. You get up here and, you know, like over there and the, you know, sort of a golf clap by that point. Let's have a hand for Matt Smith, who, amongst other people, keeps this place going. I called him a couple of times. I was supposed to get here at 5 o'clock, but because of traffic on the Hutch and the turnpike, surprisingly, it took an extra hour. And I called him. He just was so bon vivant and joie de vie. It just made it okay while I was sitting, seething. Do you mind if I start with a slow tune? You're not supposed to do that, right? You start with a wham-bang kind of tune to get everyone, get the adrenaline going. But I'm going to just go against type here and start with a tune that I found in a banjo instruction book from 1870. And this is called Spanish Fandango. You can nap if you care to. And thank you for coming out, by the way, on a Thursday night. I really appreciate it in these times. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm just stalling, and I'm going to play a bunch of slow tunes because I don't remember how to play fast anymore. This is one of the few places where I would dare to start with a slow tune. That's how cool this place is. Now, how cool you guys are. And here's a tune that, well, it's actually a medley of three tunes that starts off a little bit more slowly and then speeds up from there. And starting with John Henry, the Steel Driving Man, and going into Bonaparte's Retreat, and then finishing off with a tune that I recorded on my Territory album, and I just don't remember the name of it, because, you know, when you do an album, you got to name these tunes you've written, and it's, you just make something up. So the Passine Breakdown, I don't know, so for tonight, that's shameless pandering, I know, so.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. So, I always had a good third tune, but never had a good second tune for the set. So I would go to the third tune, even though it was the second tune, if that makes any sense. And then finally, I had a chance to go to Finland maybe 10 years ago when I shared the bill with Kanye West. And that was before Pete Davidson stole Kim Kardashian away from Kanye. Have you been following this at all? I know this is really important information. I can't believe I know this, but gosh, I shouldn't be sharing this with you at all, should I? But I just did. And did Kanye in fact buy a house across the street from Kim? Is that what I heard? I hope none of you know that. Anyway, I actually did have a chance to play at this festival in Helsinki about 10 years ago, and Kanye actually was on the bill. I was not on the same giant stage as a solo banjoist as he was, as you might imagine. But I wanted to work up a Finnish tune. And while hanging out on YouTube for a minute, found this Finnish polka called the Ellen Polka that was performed by three accordion players. So it seemed appropriate for a banjo player to do something by three accordion players somehow. And not to get serious for a moment here, but it seems sort of appropriate considering what's gone on the last day or so with Finland looking to join NATO at this point. So I'll dedicate this to Finland and them joining NATO. This is called the Ellen Polka. Thank you. I was going to wait till a little bit later to talk about this, but since we're in, I just was talking about Finland and NATO and all that. A little while ago, I worked up two Ukrainian fiddle tunes, one of which I will play for you right now. I wasn't even sure if there was a Ukrainian fiddle tradition, but I just Googled it and found two numbers. This is the one I'm going to play. And it was recorded in the mid-20s by the King of Ukrainian Fiddlers. I don't remember the gentleman's name right now, but the tune is called I Love That Girl. That's the name of it. And despite what's going on over there, the spirit of the Ukrainians and their music cannot be destroyed. So they certainly are doing an amazing job. So this is this Ukrainian fiddle tune. Thank you. So this is the tune that I used to play second, even though it was supposed to be the third tune, and now it's the fourth or fifth tune. Do we have any Norman Blake fans here? Yeah, Norman is so wonderful, and this is a tune that he wrote. I'm going to start with called Jeff Davis. And the second tune is one I wrote called Fort Monroe. And the last one's called Danville Days. When possible, I will look out at the audience. We'll look out at you. If you ever have watched Earl Scruggs in some of these videos, he's always kind of has a little wan smile and kind of looks out while he's playing. And I can't do that. I try to play like Earl Scruggs. I try to emulate him in every way, including looking at you, the audience. But I lose concentration and lose where I am on the neck, so it's dangerous. I'll try it, though. Thank you. All right, which one? Well, let's do this one. So many banjos. I have many more than this at home. I was going to bring all of them, but then I wouldn't be able to get on stage, so I decided against it. I often like to do a little history of the banjo as part of the show. Yeah, I agree. Oh, I remember that. Yeah, yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. I think, was Daryl Anger part of that?
Yeah.
Should I remember it? Yeah. A short walk from here. When I first started playing, actually, what got me into playing the banjo was this next solo right here. 16 notes of this next solo forced me to play the banjo. Does anyone know what that is? It has to do with Boston. Charlie and the MTA, thank you very much. If you remember that song, "He Never Returned, No, He Never Returned, and His Fate Is Still Unlearned," and so on and so forth. I do a sing-along, but you all have your masks on and you would pass out, so we won't do a sing-along on that. But I heard that from the Kingston Trio, the very first album I ever had back in, I got it probably 1962 or three. But these 16 notes, played by their banjo player, Dave Gard, made me play the banjo. I gotta be able to do that. It was so exciting. And then I discovered a guy named Earl Scruggs. And we're gonna hear more of this finger-picking thing. You know, all that kind of stuff. And then at some point, I started learning about what went on at the turn of the century, which I will get to in a minute. This so-called classic style banjo, rags, light classical music, marches, that sort of thing. And I thought that's kind of where, this is about as far back as anyone knew what was going on with the banjo. And then in 1990, I went to something called the Tennessee Banjo Institute in Lebanon, Tennessee, where they had 150 banjo players. Whew, that's a lot of banjo players. And some of the people there were playing in a so-called minstrel or stroke style, working out of a book from 1855. And it just blew me away. It was just like really powerful experience because I could hear the African roots in the music because the banjo came originally from Western Africa when enslaved people were brought over to the Americas. And so after doing a little bit of research, I found one of the very first tunes in these instruction books from 1855, and there were a few more in the 1850s after that, a tune called Juba, which is this kind of hand padding thing that you perhaps are familiar with. And it was also the name of the first black to perform in a minstrel show. And it was also the name of a dance that was done in the West Indies by enslaved people. So I'm going to play a little bit of Juba from these books. It's sort of like going into a time machine almost. And this is a replica of an 1840s banjo made by a guy named Boucher. He was a drum maker in Baltimore. And I saw an early version of this that was made from a gourd with this kind of a neck on it. And it's low tuned, as you can hear, and it's fretless. So I'm going to do this Juba medley, but the second tune I'm going to play is the earliest example that I've been able to find, and I think it's maybe the earliest example of black banjo music played by a street musician in Oneida, New York, of all places. And his name is lost in the sands of time, as is the name of the tune. But it's finger-picked, and you can hear a little bit of syncopation in it, which was kind of ahead of its time for being... It dates from no later than 1850. So this is the Juba medley. ¶¶ And somewhere vaguely around the 1840s, white people decided to appropriate some of this black music, some of this enslaved music. And particularly, a gentleman named Joel Walker Sweeney, who's credited with adding the fifth string to the banjo, but there's a painting in Colonial Williamsburg in the Rockefeller Museum that has a painting of two enslaved people dancing, and off to one side, there's someone playing on a, kind of, it's a gourd drum, basically, and then a gentleman playing on a gourd instrument with a fretless neck and four strings on it. And there's a short string halfway up the neck. And it was painted by the plantation owner, the enslaver of these people. And so it's kind of the smoking gun indicating that, and this is from around 1780 in South Carolina, that the short string that we have on this, on all banjos these days, all five-string banjos, the drone string dates that far back and is actually a black creation. Anyway, I'm going to do three tunes from the very first banjo instruction book from 1855. And the second tune, well, the first tune is called The Grapevine Twist, which was definitely played by Joel Sweeney. And the second tune is called Going Over the Mountain. And there actually was an earlier banjo book from 1850 credited to the Singer family, as in the Singer sewing machine. And they had, it was one book, but they put for the banjo, for the fiddle, for the flute. And it's all the same book, but the same notes for, and you just, oh, okay, this is for the calliope, and this is for the, you know, the electric guitar. So part of this second tune comes from the Singer version and part from the Briggs book from 1855. And then I'll throw two more in, just for good measure. Thank you. Actually, if I can remember this. Yeah. very first banjo instruction book that featured finger picking in it. It dates from 1860 and was written by a guy named Converse. Frank Converse, I believe, was his name. He wrote a whole bunch of banjo instruction books. And in this book from 1860, for one thing, he had a chart that would go along with your banjo, and it would show you where you would put frets in. Frets were just starting to come in around this time, 1860, 1865. Some folks said, if you put frets on a banjo, you'll ruin it. A violin doesn't have frets. Why would you put frets on a banjo? But first, people would just have like a piece of yarn or string to indicate where the frets would be. And in addition to that, there was a little cutout of a pick that you could put across, you know, cut out some copper or something in that shape and use it as a pick. But on page 33 of this book, the first half of the book was basically this downstroke style that I was playing in, that's what we today call frailing or clawhammer. But on page 33, it talked about the guitar style, which was finger picking. And so, if I can remember this, it's the very first tune in that book. So the very first tune in a book that talks about finger picking is the New York March. Let's see if I can get through this. Thank you. And that actually is in the music. I don't remember how it indicated that, but that was what was in there. So I'm going to play a tune from 1902, actually, just a tiny bit before I was born. Let's see. That very first tune I started off with, that slow tune, that slow lugubrious tune, was from 1870. And it was coming right after that very tune I just played, where people started finger picking. And people were trying to get away from the less savory aspects of the minstrel shows and trying to upgrade the image of the banjo, which continues today in some ways. The ladies took up the banjo, and if you were a lady of refinement, you would play the banjo. And it became a parlor instrument. And again, people were playing light classical music, marches, as I just indicated, and rags. And some of the very first Edison cylinders, which dated, I think the very earliest cylinder with banjo music on it, dates from 1894, thereabouts. And banjo players were playing with orchestras or pianos, that sort of thing. And a guy named Wes Ostman and another guy named Fred Van Epps were the leading lights of banjo-dom, as it were. And actually, you know, we've already gone through 78s, still, you know, 33 and a third, that's still out there a little bit. 8-track, I think it's gone, right, as far as I know. Cassettes are coming back a little bit, but not much. CDs are dead, for the unless you want to buy one of mine back there, of course. You know what I'm saying. Anyway, they're not completely dead. In fact, far from it. But anyway, streaming is about to go away because the latest thing is, that's right, folks, cylinders, they're coming back. You scoff, you guffaw, but no, in fact, I actually found out that I live in northern Jersey and in, I can't remember the town right now, but where the Edison lab was and still, thank you, West Orange, you get a Cupid doll. Thank you. Thank you. West Orange, there's still the Edison where the factory was, and there's still the museum there, and it's really fabulous. There's all sorts of amazing stuff there, and they've actually started recording cylinders there, and I went down there probably 7 or 8 years ago now and recorded a few cylinders, and it's so great. You get it back, and it's And they have, you know, it's this wax cylinder, and there's a guy there who's like wiping off all the used and spent, you know, shavings of the cylinder. And I actually have one cylinder of my music. I wrote a tune in this early banjo style so it could sound appropriate. And I will sell you that cylinder for $100 to $300 if you're interested. Anyway, I'm going to play a tune dating from 1902 in the so-called classic style of banjo. And here it goes. Sometimes when you play the banjo, tunes just pop out of it. I just did that, and oh, I know that tune. Okay. Come up here and hold my picks and then hand them to me. And banjos are way too heavy. Whew, I like to sit. You should try these things out. They're not light. If you look at these early Gibson banjo catalogs from the 30s, a friend of mine pointed this out to me. Nobody is standing. They have these gentlemen in tuxedos holding banjos in their laps, as it should be. This business of Bill Monroe getting banjo players to stand, that's bunk. Wear these things for two sets. I've got some balloons that I, anyway. I'm going to move along the banjo timeline and do a tune by Gus Cannon, actually two tunes by Gus Cannon. If you're familiar with a tune called Walk Right In by the Rooftop Singers, with Eric Darling, who was originally in the Weavers, and they had a hit on a tune called Walk Right In back in 62 or 63, and it was actually written by this gentleman, Gus Cannon, who was a black banjo player who lived in Memphis, Tennessee, and was part of the jug band craze that was sweeping Memphis back then. There was a Memphis jug band, and there was Gus Cannon and his jug stompers, and I'm sure the Jim Queskin Jug Band performed here as a Club 47 at some point, I would imagine. Certainly Jim Queskin. Sorry, many times? I would imagine, yeah. He was part of the Jug Band revival. Dave N. Ronkhead had a Jug Band, and there was the Even Dozen Jug Band with John Sebastian and Maria Muldaur, and David Grisman, for that matter. But I heard that Gus Cannon played jug, but he also played banjo, and you hear these old 78s, and how did he play both of those at the same time? And I finally saw a photo of Gus Cannon, and he had like a Bob Dylan harmonica rack with a jug in it. And it's like, it was not made of plastic, I bet, so he probably had to see a chiropractor on a regular basis, I would imagine. So I'm going to do a couple of Gus Cannon tunes. He was an amazing banjo player. In his later years, he was a street sweeper in Memphis. But I think he finally got some money from royalties from Walk Right In. So here's... First tune's called The Hollywood Rag. And I can't remember the name of the second tune, but it's a great tune. Take my word for it. Here's the Gus Cannon medley. So I would be remiss if I didn't talk about Pete Seeger in the banjo timeline. We have to have Pete Seeger fans here, I would imagine. And when you think about Pete, you usually think about the strumming style that he did, as a banjo player, that is, amongst many other amazing things that he did in his life. And Pete was fearless in terms of playing music. If he had the urge, he would just do it. I was doing this festival in Canada, this big folk festival in Canada one time, and they had these school buses taking people back to the airport at the end of the festival. So I get on this bus with my flotsam and jetsam, and there's no one else on the bus except the bus driver and Pete Seeger. And so I'm sitting right behind Pete, and we exchange pleasantries, and then he turns to me and says, "You know, Tony, the thing about audiences these days is they don't know how to sing the bass parts of songs." And he said, "I'll show you what I mean. Do you know I'm going to lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside?" And I said, "Yeah, Pete, I grew up listening to you play that on a record." He said, "Well, why don't you sing it?" So I start singing, "Gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside." And Pete's going, "Lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside." So I'm doing sing along with Pete, just the two of us. And it was like, wow, this is pretty cool. And then we get to the airport, and when it's time to go through customs, there are like six or seven really long lines that aren't moving at all for some reason. And I'm in one line with my banjo, and Pete's in the next line next to me, pretty much right next to me. And we have our banjos, and we're talking a little bit and just kind of looking around. And I look over at one point, and Pete takes out his banjo. He kind of leans down and takes out the banjo and starts playing. And, you know, there are a lot of business folks there heading into the States, and we're kind of in our folk, you know, slightly muddy shoes and, you know, jeans and whatnot. And people are kind of looking at Pete like, it's Pete Seeger, for goodness sake, you know. And then I took out my banjo, you know, not to be deterred. If Pete's going to play, I guess I can do it. And we started doing these banjo duets. So anyway, a very fond memory of picking along with Pete at Canadian Customs. So, why don't we sing along just one time through? I know you have your masks on, but we could use it right now. I'm gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside. Gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. Gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside. Gonna study war no more. I ain't gonna study war no more. Ain't gonna study war no more. Ain't gonna study war no more. I ain't gonna study war no more. I ain't gonna study war no more. Ain't gonna study war no more. Thank you. Thank you very much. The other thing that Pete did was the basic strum, something that appeared in his book that he put out in 1948. I don't want to tell too many stories, but I'll just pass this out, the other one on to you. I may have told this here before, but pretend you didn't hear it if you did. I was teaching someone this, the basic strum. I'll play it for you, in fact. That's Pete right there. That's so Pete. And anyway, I had a student, this is in the 80s, when I was still doing one-on-one lessons, and I was saying, and they said they wanted to learn how to do the basic strum, so I started playing it. And when I play bluegrass, I have one or two fingers down on the head like this for support. And my student said after a while, now, did Pete have his fingers on the head like this for support, or was he just doing it free? And I said, I don't know, let's look in the book. And it didn't indicate in the book, so I called Pete because I was friendly, and his wife Toshi answers the phone, and I said, Toshi, Tony Trischka, I have just a quick question for Pete, quick banjo question. This was like in the earliest evening, and she said, oh, Pete's in the bathtub right now. I said, I'll call back later. She said, no, it's okay. I'll reach the phone. We'll see if the cord goes that far. No one had cords on their phones at that point, but they had. This is in Beacon, New York, or just south of Beacon, New York, up on this hillside, and suddenly I'm talking to Pete in the bathtub. I said, Pete, you're looking kind of wet. Well, yeah, I guess I am. And I said, so, Pete, I just have a question about the basic strum. Do you put one or two fingers on the head for support, or is your hand floating free? And he said, well, you know, I never should have put the basic strum in the book, that right in the very beginning of the book. It's too complicated. It should have been later on in the book. And then he started talking about how there's this wonderful hike you can do around the island of Manhattan. And he started talking about the palisades, the geological construction of the palisades, which overlook the Hudson. And then how he taught Martin Luther King, "We Shall Overcome," and how Abraham Lincoln took a flat boat down the Mississippi, and then he starts talking about Neanderthal men, and in the middle of it, my student's kind of going, like I'm on the phone for like 10 minutes with Pete, because Pete, you didn't always have conversations with Pete. He would sort of hold forth, but he never repeated himself. It wasn't like, you know, your dowdy uncle who would just, oh, we've already heard that 10 times, but anyway, it was always interesting. So after about 10 or 15 minutes, Pete says, oh, you know, about the basic strum and whether I plant my fingers, I don't know. That was truly the answer. Anyway, Pete put out this banjo instruction book in 48, and 7 years later, in 1955, he put out something called the Goofing Off Suite on Folkways Records. And I'm going to do two tunes from that. One is his version of Cindy, which is really fun to play, so I'm going to render that for you right now. This is Pete's version, pretty much note for note of Cindy. Thank you. It's short. He sang it so it was longer, but I'm not going to regale you with my singing. So, also on that record is Irving Berlin's Blue Skies. I mean, Pete did all sorts of things on there. He had a little bit of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, not the whole symphony, but the Ode to Joy, part of Beethoven's Seventh, a little Bach, and I think Jesu Joy of Man's Desiring, and some fiddle tunes, just a whole bunch of things, but including this next version of Blue Skies by Irving Berlin, an amazing version of it. I just wasn't familiar with this album until maybe 10 or 15 years ago, and went, God, where was this all my life? And you can still get it on Smithsonian Folkways, and you'll find it on your finer Spotify's and Apple Music and that sort of thing. And this is note for note pretty much as close as I could get it to the way Pete played it back in 1955. And I had a chance to share the bill with him a couple of years before he passed. He was probably 90 years old at the time. And we were backstage, and I said, Pete, do you remember how to play? Do you play Blue Skies anymore? And he says, well, I only play about 10 banjo tunes anymore, but one of them is Blue Skies. And he played it pretty much the way I'm about to play it for you at the age of 90. So hopefully I'll be able to do the same. So this is Pete's version of Blue Skies. Thank you, and thank you, Pete. All right, it's time to do an Earl Scruggs medley to one person is applauding. Wow. Okay, I'll skip the Earl Scruggs tune, but never mind. You wouldn't want to hear it anyway. Yeah, boring. Earl's boring. Okay. When I was, 7 or 8, probably younger, before my adult teeth came in, I had a little gap in my front teeth, just like Earl Scruggs. I guess I could get some dental work done to bring that back. Anyway, so I'm going to do 3 tunes. I wouldn't exist without Earl Scruggs. First time I went to Earl's house was in 1990 on the way to the Tennessee Banjo Institute. And, you know, folks down there will say, come on down if you're ever in our part of the country. And so I gave Earl a call and said, yeah, come on down. So a friend of mine and I went over to his house in Madison, Tennessee. And we go in and knock on the door and ring the doorbell. And who answers the door? Earl Scruggs. It was like, wow, Earl Scruggs answered. Well, he lives here. I guess that makes sense. But it was like, and Earl was a really laid-back guy, so it was sort of like, you know, hey, it's Earl, but it's Earl Scruggs. you know, and we're issued into his house, and he's sitting in this big easy chair, and we're on this little divan off to one side, and I wasn't sure if I was supposed to kiss his pick or what. It was almost like having an audience with the Pope or something. And we talked about the weather for about 5 minutes, and that was going nowhere, because Earl wasn't like that much of a conversationalist. But I started asking him some questions about the old days, and he started telling a few stories. He mentioned how when he, in the early days, like in the 50s, you would have a skin head on your banjo instead of a plastic head, and how he would have to put it close to the fireplace, you know, when the head got a little bit slack, to just tighten it up. And he mentioned that right after they did Flatt & Scruggs did the Beverly Hillbillies, he was approached by Paul Henning, who was the producer of the Beverly Hillbillies, who was starting to create, I think, one of the great cultural landmarks in American history, Petticoat Junction. Petticoat Junction. And he called Earl and said, Earl, I'd like you to be the engineer on this show. And Earl said, well, I can't go out to Hollywood. It would break up Flatt & Scruggs. And Paul Henning said, well, we'll fly you back for the Opry on Friday and Saturday nights. But anyway, he demurred. So banjo history would have been different if Earl had been the engineer on. Darn, what a missed opportunity. And also he was mentioning how they made a film about Earl and had all these special guests. I think it was called Banjo Man or Earl Scruggs' Family and Friends, something like that. And he had the Byrds. Bob Dylan was on there. They did Nashville Skyline Rag together and a couple East Virginia Blues. And other folks were on there, Doc Watson. And the plan was, because Ravi Shankar came to Nashville, and the idea was for Earl to jam with Ravi Shankar, but they couldn't find a film crew to do it. But Ravi Shankar came over to the house anyway, and Earl and Ravi jammed along with the tabla player Ala Raka. I would love to have heard that. There's no recording. It's just lost in the sands of time. And Earl said after that that Earl asked Ravi what he wanted to have for lunch, and Ravi said, let's have Kentucky Fried Chicken. So they got tubs of chicken and mashed potatoes and slaw and sat on the floor and ate. So now you know what Ravi Shankar liked to eat. You never knew all the information you were going to get when you came here tonight, did you? About the Kardashians and Ravi Shankar's eating habits. I mean, you're welcome. Okay. Oh, I got to finish up soon. I still have half a set to go. Matt, when am I supposed to be done? 8 minutes? Okay. Oh, good. Thank goodness. Yeah, oh, you're right. Jeez. Okay, I can't leave till I'm done with that. The meter's running. So here's the Earl Scruggs medley after all that fol-de-rol. I'm going to start with a tune called You Can't Stop Me From Dreaming, which is a very obscure Earl tune that is only on the second version of Flatt & Scruggs at Carnegie Hall. Earl would do these bass banjo duets with Flatt & Scruggs, Foggy Mountain Boys bassist Jake Tulloch, and this is was a duet that they would do. And check out the ending and then see if you can figure out why he did that, why Earl did this. And then I'll go into Little Home Sweet Home and then finish off with Farewell Blues. I'm not leaving, but it's called Farewell Blues, and it's all Earl stuff. So, the Earl Scruggs medley. Thank you. you. Really interesting, this lick here. I remember hearing that when I was, 14 or 15 years old and thinking, that's really cool, but I never analyzed it. Earl's in the key of C, and he's playing a C sharp against the C. I don't know how he thought this stuff up. Any ideas why Earl ended the bass banjo duet with that? I heard him do that. It was there's a film of it on one of these Martha White shows. You can find it on YouTube. I mean, why? It's a bass banjo duet, and he ends. That's the most bizarre ending. Because what does the bass do? Boom, 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 boom. And so Earl's doing this bass banjo duet and ends. Anyway, I thought it was interesting. Sorry. Okay. All right, I'm going to do one of the tunes I wrote. It's about, can I do one of my tunes finally? Is it asking too much? Oh, I'm running this show. Never mind. As I was saying, it's sometimes easier to write songs than name them. Implying that anyway. So I wrote this tune and needed a name for it. My son Sean, who, by the way, what about this head? It's the latest in fine art on banjo heads. My son Sean painted this for me for my last birthday in January. On January 16th. Mark it down. No, never mind. Anyway, it's the wave of the future, folks. Anyway, when he was about 7 or 8, I said, hey, Sean, what should I call this? He said, Rainbow Yoshi. I still have never, is it a game or is it a show? It's way out of my league. Sorry? Oh, it's Mario. Thank you. No, I've learned something. So this is called Rainbow Yoshi. Having nothing to do with Rainbow Yoshi. Thank you. Thank you so much and howdy, as Bill Monroe used to say. Here's another tune that I wrote. And I put out an album, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, called Great Big World, and it's on there. With a five-piece chamber group, and unfortunately they're not with me tonight, just these guys. These five folks. And I was fortunate enough to have Abigail Washburn sing a short little lyric that I put on there. So this is Lost. Thank you. Thank you. I think this is the fourth tune in the key of C. You're not supposed to do that, but I shouldn't even tell you that. This is a banjo that Bela Fleck developed. This isn't the exact one, but it's his model, made by Gold Tone Banjos, and it's tuned down to a C, so it's low tuned. And I'm going to write, I wrote a tune, I should say. I got this just before the pandemic hit last March, before it really was getting underway, and I just wrote like 7 or 8 tunes on this thing because I just fell in love with it and still love it. So this is an unnamed tune, unless you have a suggestion. Frank? I don't know. Okay, we'll call this Frank for tonight. Actually, I do have a name. I forgot. It's called Django's Dream. Or we have a dog named Django. And so it was named after Django, not Frank. And my wife said, you know what you should do? And it doesn't sound at all like Django Reinhardt's music. But she said, you should have like a Django flavor in there somewhere. And I said, it doesn't really fit. But then I came up with this, you know, I transcribed a short Django that can start with that. And my wife, of course, was right. Put a Django lick in the beginning. So that's what starts it. I wrote the rest of it. Django wrote the first part. Not the dog, but the guitarist. So much. We're going lower, folks. Yes, it's the cello banjo tuned to a low G, very low. And I might fall off the banjo on the second. For some reason, the second tune always throws me. I practice it 20 times and then it falls apart. So if it falls apart, I'll skip to the last tune. I mean, you like seeing, you know, train wrecks and things like that. If I fall off the banjo, you would like ogle, right? Okay. Anyway, so the first tune is Shenandoah, an old folk song that I grew up loving and still love. And the second tune is something that I have an album called Shall We Hope, which is my latest album. And this, I wrote it as an instrumental, but it became a song on that album. It has kind of a Celtic flavor to it, and I call it Cross the Sea. And the last tune is also unnamed, and I wrote it in 30 seconds to a minute. Truly, Bill Monroe had this phrase, I won't go into the whole story, but he had a phrase, I can write a song in 30 seconds to a minute. I can write a song in a minute. So I tried it, and I came up with a whole lot of mediocre stuff, but this last tune I'm kind of happy with. So here's the Shenandoah medley. Let's see, I'm going to do a couple more tunes for you, and let's see. I have a John Hartford medley to do for you, and I have a Beatles medley to do for you. And I'm going to end with one of those tunes. The John Hartford tune ends kind of fancy. Which would you like to have last? How many want John Hartford to finish? Okay, how many want the Beatles to finish? The Beatles are finishing. It's a quorum of our peers. Okay, so it goes. It could go either way. So, I'm sorry. It was not rigged. I did this so I could. I counted everybody. There was one person who wanted the John Hartford last. God, things are really turning ugly here. Suddenly, we were having such a pleasant evening. Hey, Matt, would you intervene, please? Be the voice of God for a second. He's gone. Oh, no. So we have to have some John Hartford fans here, I imagine. I'm a big fan. Yeah. That second tune that way back when I did the John Henry medley, the second tune, Bonaparte's Retreat, the last part of that, I learned from John Hartford. There was like a fifth part. I had the great opportunity to sit in a darkened schoolroom with John for about an hour playing fiddle banjo duets a long time ago. It was just one of the great musical moments of my life. And I learned this tune at a festival in Boise, Idaho. I was sitting in with this jam band in New Jersey where I live. It was a really great band, and kind of playing some local gigs once in a while. And They said, we're doing this festival in Boise, Idaho. Would you like to join us out there? And I said, yeah, that sounds like fun. They said, we're going to have Vassar Clements playing fiddle with us. I went, I'm definitely coming now. No question about it. Vassar played with John Hartford and Bill Monroe when he was very young, and you know, it's just an amazing fiddler. So I was going to meet them out there. I thought this was sort of like a rock festival, a jam band festival. So I fly out to Salt Lake City to switch planes to get up to Boise. And I get to Salt Lake City, get to my gate, and there's a banjo player and a mandolin player playing, jamming at the gate. I went, what? And then I hear someone call my name, and I look over, and there's John Hartford. And it turns out it was his band, and he was playing there. And the next thing I know, John gets out his fiddle, and I get out my banjo, and we start jamming on fiddle tunes at the gate. And after about 15 minutes, a Delta representative came over and said, we thought she was going to put the kibosh on the whole thing. And she said, if you guys will keep playing, we'll upgrade you to first class. We were going to do that anyway, so great. Unfortunately, it was a short flight, but hey, thank you, John Hartford, for getting his first class tickets up to Boise. Instead of the plastic glasses, we had glass glasses. They're so exciting. Anyway, so the first tune is Steam-Powered Aeroplane. If you don't own any other acoustic album, you should own Aeroplane by John Hartford. It's unbelievable. And it's the title track, Steam-Powered Aeroplane. The second tune is a sing-along. You don't have to know it. You'll just find yourself singing along. You'll be just whipped into a frenzy. You won't be able to resist, like being in a whirlpool in the ocean or something. Anyway, and the last tune is one that I learned that I saw John play out there. He mostly played fiddle, but he played banjo on this particular tune which he wrote, and he does all this crazy tuning stuff. And I came back to the same festival the next year because I couldn't find it anywhere. And the guy who was running the festival, I asked him about it. He said, yeah, here's the tape right here. And so I learned it off the tape. And it's John's tune called Foggy Mountain Landscape. So here's the John Hartford medley. Sing along, everybody. Boogie, woogie, woogie with me. Hey, babe, you want a boogie? Boogie, woogie, woogie with me. We can boogie over here. We can boogie over there. Hey, babe, we can boogie everywhere. Hey, babe, you want a boogie? Boogie, woogie, woogie with me. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, folks. I've really enjoyed playing for you. I haven't overstayed my welcome. It's way past time. But you've been great. Thank you so much. Please tip abundantly your fine servers here and all the fine folks that are here amongst us helping out. And thank you, Matt, very much for having me here. And let's see. I've got an online banjo school. If you want to be able to play exactly every single note that I play tonight, within a week you will have it down like pat. Guaranteed. Or half your money, third, or no money back. Anyway, it's the Tony Church School of Banjo. If you find yourself in New York City on July 20th, I will be at Joe's Pub doing tribute to Earl Scruggs with a full band, and including a few tunes. Back in the late 90s, Earl would go over to John Hartford's house and jam out, and I got a hold of a bunch of recordings of these jams, and I'll be doing a few of those, a few unheard Earl Scruggs tunes as part of that show. And let's see, I've got some merchandise, folks. Yes, I've got banjo socks. Yes, I've got CDs. And yes, even more importantly, yes, banjo player trading cards. Truly. You guffaw, but it's actually true. And there's no bubble gum involved, but this gentleman came up with this idea for banjo player trading cards, and he had five artists on call, and we banjo players would look at the artwork from these artists and say, well, I'd like that artist to paint my portrait, and that's what happened. So we all got our from photos, portraits done by these various artists, so it's kind of a cool thing. Anyway, I'm going to finish with the Beatles medley, and thank you so, so much. I've really just had a great time up here with you folks. Thank you. And some of us here are heading over to Banjo Camp North tomorrow for 3 days of thrills and spills and chills with like at least 100 banjo players. Doesn't that sound like fun? You're not leaping and up and down with excitement, but anyway, for some of us, it's fun. So this is the Beatles medley. Sing along in spite of your masks if you can. I have to remember how the first tune starts. It's coming. Thank you. Thank you, folks. Thanks very much. Thank you. Thank you. It's too hard to get past all these evangelists. Should I do one more tune and that'll be the encore? I'm not trying to. Yes, really, what a way to get an encore. I'm not leaving until I get an encore, but it's just rather than schlep all the way back here, I'll try to get knock over these banjos and come all the way back. I'll do one more. Thank you. Thank you. Let's see. I'll do a tune called John Cohen's Blues. This is on my Territory album. It has nothing to do with John Cohen, who was one of the founding members of the New Lost City Ramblers. By the way, you should all go out to the Bob Dylan Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma. My wife and I were fortunate enough to be able to go out there for the opening. It was a very amazing time out there. Great dinner, and the first night there was a concert with Mavis Staples. She's okay, I guess. Second night, Patti Smith. Third night, Elvis Costello. And the center itself is really amazing. And it's right, it's part of the... There's a big building. On one side is the Woody Guthrie Center, and the other side is the Bob Dylan Center. And if you want to see the leather jacket he wore on stage at Newport in 1965 when he went electric, that's there. And the tambourine that inspired Mr. Tambourine Man. And on and on and on. Christmas cards from the Beatles, you know, all sorts of stuff. And by the way, how many of you people thought that Pete Seeger was an old fogey for he wanted to get a hatchet to cut the cord as... Dylan was singing in 65 at Newport. That's how the story goes, but I talked to Pete about it, and he said that, in fact, it wasn't. He was very happy to have Bob go electric. He just thought the sound was terrible. That was his complaint. He couldn't hear the lyrics. And there's actually a letter to Bob in there by Pete where he says that exact thing. So for some of you who might have thought less of Pete for that, he had only Bob's best interests at heart. Anyway. This is the John Cohen Blues.
Z-Man with Tony Trischka, solo acoustic, Club Passim, Cambridge, Massachusetts, 512-2022, FOB, DFC, KFC, ZFC, AARP, Shep, CCM4Vs, Lunatech V2, Sound Devices 722, Stage Lip, 4 feet in the air, in the sweet spot for show number 132 of 2022. And sad to announce the passing of Gino Cappelletti, Boston Patriots. Rest in peace, Gino.